All right, so we're going to pick up here now, continuing our study on the doctrines of the Bible. We're looking at sin. The term sin is one of the most common Bible words describing the fallen condition of man. And we know that all men have sinned. Romans 3:23 says, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." There's not one of us that hasn't. All of us have. Let's go ahead and turn to Romans chapter 5 and verse 12. Romans is an excellent book dealing with our sin nature and what we are. In Romans 5:12, we are told, "Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned." So it was through this one man, Adam, that sin entered into the world, or we could say into mankind. We understand that the fall of Satan had already taken place, but this is where it was really imputed to mankind. So, "As by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned, and with it came the consequences." But all of us have sinned. So what is sin? We're going to look at this real quickly. Let's go to 1 John chapter 3, verse 4. 1 John 3, 4. And this is very basic, but it really, these are things you can use as you're sharing the gospel with people to try and show them what sin is, to try and illustrate it for them. First John 3, 4 says, "Whosoever committeth sin transgresseth also the law." So if you commit sin, if you do a sin, you're transgressing the law, because for sin is the transgression of the law. So to transgress the law means you go beyond the bounds. You pass the line. God says, don't do this, and you go beyond it. So Adam and Eve, when they ate, they transgressed the law. They went beyond the bounds of the law, and that is sin. So basically what God says to do or not do, if we do what he says not to do or we don't do what he says to do, that is sin, because we've transgressed the law. We haven't done what the law required of us. Okay, so that is sin. Sin is the transgression of the law. Go with me now to James chapter 2. James 2:9. It says in James 2:9, "But if ye have respect to persons, ye commit sin and are convinced of the law's transgressors. For whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all." That's a pretty high standard. If you keep the whole law, but you offend in one point, or you break one of the points of the law, you're guilty of all of it. Because all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Just like Adam and Eve, all the consequences of disobedience fell on mankind when they just simply disobeyed that one law. They're guilty of all. Okay, to sin is also to come short of the glory of God. Romans 3:23, let's go ahead and turn there. Most of us probably have this memorized, if not all of us, but it says, "For all have sinned, and in sinning, what happens? And we've come short of the glory of God." So to sin is to come short of God's glory. You're not hitting the mark, and that's a good way to look at it. You miss the mark. God's standard's up here, and we all fall short of it. We don't reach it. When we sin, that's what happens. It's also, go to Isaiah chapter 53 and verse 6. Isaiah chapter 53, verse 6. Let's actually pick up in verse 5. It says, "But he was wounded for our transgressions," and sin is the transgression of the law, remember. "He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all." So sin is to turn to our way. It's to turn to your own way. And that's ultimately, that's the heart of sin right there, is to just, I just want it my way. And can we not all say, sadly, amen to that? That, I mean, we know I know there's times we sin and we don't realize it, but most of the time when we sin, we realize it and we purposely choose it. We choose to turn to our own way. Is that not, would that be an accurate statement? I mean, I can say for me at least it's an accurate statement that I'm choosing to turn to my own way, not God's way. And that's the heart of what sin is. It's to turn to your own way. That's what Eve did. The very first sin within mankind, we look at what she did and she said, yeah, it is. It does look good. It will make me wise. She turned to her own way instead of God's way. She was leaning on her understanding and not on the Lord. And that's what happened. That's what sin is. That's the heart of sin. Even Adam and his sin. Now, he sinned willingly and he knew what he was doing, but what was the motivation for him to do that? The motivation was, he says, well, my wife. I can't leave my wife like this. I have to go into this error with her. That's essentially what he chose. He rejected God to follow his spouse. That's what he was doing. Why? Because it was self-motivated. He turned to his own way. He said, this is what I want. And that's in every single one of us. This is what sin is. It's to go after what I want. And I think if we are fooling ourselves if we don't think that the sin in your life, the sin in my life is not self-motivated. That I do it because I want to. I mean, seriously, I know this is like a silly illustration, but have you ever gotten to like the last piece of whatever it is the same time as somebody else? And what is your first instinct? Isn't it? Isn't it your, that's mine anyway. I'm like, oh, or, you know, if it's a small piece and a big piece, what do brothers and sisters usually do? Well, the one that got it was like, oh, I got it here. You can have this little scrap that nobody wants. I'm keeping the good one, right? Isn't that how we are? Yeah, for the most part. Now, I know we overcome these things, but our nature is to immediately say, nope, the best for me. I'm taking care of me. That's our nature. That's sin. That's what sin is. It's rooted in selfishness. Pride was the very first sin, the original sin. All right, let's go to Judges 10:10. I think that's where it's telling me the way it wrote this reference. I should have clarified it for myself. Yeah. All right, Judges 10:10. All right, look at that, 25 minutes. Judges 10:10, it says, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, saying, we have sinned against thee. How have we sinned against God? This is what they said, both because we have forsaken our God and also served Balaam. So to sin is to forsake the Lord. And they served Balaam. Why? Because that's what everyone else was doing. That's what they wanted. So they turned their back on God to serve their idols. All right? They forsook the Lord. Go to Deuteronomy 9:18. Deuteronomy chapter 9 and verse 18. All right, Deuteronomy 9:18, and I fell down before the Lord as at the first 40 days and 40 nights. I did neither eat bread nor drink water because of all your sins which ye sinned in doing wickedly in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. So to do that which is wicked in the sight of God is sin. Let's go to 2 Chronicles 6:37. 2 Chronicles 6:37. To sin is to do that which is amiss, which is wrong. It says in 2 Chronicles 6:37, yet if they bethink themselves in the land whither they are carried captive, and turn and pray unto thee in the land of their captivity, saying, we have sinned, we have done amiss, and have dealt wickedly. So to do amiss is sin, and that goes hand in hand really with Romans 3:23, to come short of the glory of God. You miss the mark, you're not hitting what God is expecting of us. And then let's go to Romans 3, 9 and 10. And we see also that a lack of righteousness is sin. Romans 3, 9. What then? Are we better than they? No, in no wise, for we have before proved both Jews and Gentiles that they are all under sin. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. So, sin is to have a lack of righteousness. We are devoid of righteousness. Why? Because we've done that which is wrong, that which is wicked. Now, the origin of sin, I think we're mostly familiar with this. All of us probably should be. I've had us turn there several times, but let's go ahead and look at it anyway. Isaiah chapter 14. So sin originated with Satan's pride. Again, for us, it's to turn to one's own way. I mean, that's the essence of sin, is that you do what you want. And this is where the very beginning of sin started. Isaiah 14, 12, it says, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, Is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms?" So it originated with Satan's pride. That's the origin of sin. Let's go also to 1 Timothy 3:6. We are warned there. Obviously, these are qualifications for a pastor, but it says of him that he's not to be a novice, lest being lifted up with pride, he fall into the condemnation of the devil. So it puts you in lockstep with the devil. You know, you're never more like the devil than when you're full of pride. And that's the heart of sin. It puts us one in one with him. It's to turn to our own way, to think on ourselves. And again, we have a wrong understanding of pride, or rather it's an incomplete understanding of pride, because most of the time we think that pride deals with, you know, I'm so great, I'm so amazing, and look at me, look how good I am at this, look how good I am at that. But pride is really just a focus on self in any way, shape, or form. Okay, I mean, that's essentially what pride is. All right, and, you know, some of the most proud people are those that are kind of like an Eeyore-type mentality, where it's like, oh, woe is me, poor me, I just... You know, things are just so hard for me. I don't know what to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. Oh, look what I'm going through. And I'm not trying to say that we shouldn't, like, you know, share the things that are going on with people. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not even saying it's wrong to show someone an accomplishment that you did. Nothing like that. It all has to do with where it's coming from in the heart. But what I am saying is some of the most proud people are the people that are just like, woe is me. You know, look at how bad things are for me. And it's always like, well, I would, but just, you know, this is happening and this is going on. And there's a lot of Christians that are like that, that maybe they're not the, you know, oh, haha, look how great I am. But they're on the other end of the spectrum, and it's still pride. At the end of the day, it's still just pride. That's all it is, because the focus and attention is on me. Look at me. And pride rears its ugly head in so many different ways, and everybody in here has to deal with it, every one of you. If you're thinking, no, I don't, you know, then yes, you do. You're right there as part of the problem. Everyone in here has to deal with it, all of us. It's something that each of us has to face, the pride in our own hearts. It's a reality that we live with, and you're going to until you stand before the Lord, and we get that glorified body. But that's just how it's going to be, and we have to recognize that that's an issue. So we need to be willing to confront it in our own lives. And man, it's hard to humble yourself. But I'm telling you, it's much. I'd rather humble myself than God humble me. That's for sure, because there ain't no telling what God's going to do, how God's going to do it. I'm just telling you right now. I mean, when he humbled King David, like, he displayed it in front of everybody what David had done. How many of you want your sin displayed in front of everybody? No thanks. I'm just, me personally, no thanks. I don't want my sin displayed in front of everybody. I don't. I don't know if you do, but most people, I would think, don't. But sometimes that's what it's going to take, maybe. You say, I'd be humiliated. Right. Humility. Humility. So that's why we're told, humble yourselves, therefore, in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. See, that's what God recommends. Humble yourself. And I'd much rather do that. God, then I even pray, God, help me humble myself. God, like, point out to me where I'm wrong and help me to be humble, God, because I want your help. Lord, I want to be where you want me to be. I don't want to be filled with pride. I don't want to be lifted up with pride and fall into the condemnation of the devil. I mean, yes, that's for a preacher, but I think that's for anybody that's going to be lifted and filled with pride. You're going to fall into the condemnation of the devil, and we shouldn't want that. Good morning. Glad you guys are here. All right, so sin originated with Satan's pride, and sin entered the world through Adam's disobedience. We already read that in Romans chapter 5, verse 12. We can see it in Genesis chapter 3. You know, Paul sheds more light on it. If we would, let's go back to 1 Timothy chapter 3 as we get a little bit more light on it from Paul. We're all familiar with Genesis chapter 3, and we just read Romans 5:12. Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men. But here we see, I said 1 Timothy 3, but it's actually 1 Timothy 2, but the end of 1 Timothy 2. It says in verse 13, for Adam was first formed, then Eve, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression. So Adam was not deceived. It just sheds more light on it. He willingly did it, but what did he do? He turned to his own way. He wasn't deceived as the woman was deceived. The woman was clearly deceived by the devil, by Satan, by the serpent. Adam was not. He knew, like, this is bad. Like, can you imagine what was going through his head? He says, this is completely wrong. Like, but what do I do about my wife? She just ate of this. God told us not to eat it. And so his sin was, I mean, there's a lot of pictures that you can put with that. You can say, yes, it was motivated by love, and I believe it was motivated by love. But was his love in the right place? I think it's obvious for all of us to say, well, of course it wasn't. He rejected God to choose his wife. So I have no doubt, in my mind anyway, that his decision was motivated by his love for his wife. But it was misplaced. His love should have been to God, and his obedience should have been to God. Now, it's easy for us to stand here and say, way to go, Adam, you loser. You really messed up, didn't you? But have we not done the same thing every time we turn to our own way? We do the same thing he did. When we sin, we just turn to our own way for our love of whatever it is more than we love God. It's that simple. We're no better than him. We're just like him. It's almost like he's our father. Oh, wait, he is our father. So we are just like him. So I'm not trying to knock him, but I'm saying he knew. He was not deceived. And he was, I mean, I doubt he's like, I wonder what's going to happen. Am I going to just drop dead right here? What is even that? Did he even know what it meant to be dead? Maybe, maybe not. I think he probably did. I think God gave him an understanding of what it was. He was obviously very intelligent to be able to name every animal that God created. I mean, that's a huge amount of intelligence. But he did it with eyes wide open, and he willingly made that choice. Could you imagine being in that position, living in perfection, and seeing your spouse eat of this thing that God said, do not eat from this tree, and you see her do it, or you see him do it, and you're just like, oh. And they're like, nah, you try it, it's good. And you're just like, oh. You ever been in a situation like that where somebody does wrong and they're like, now you do it, come on. And you have to, like, it's that moment of decision, and you're like, oh.
What do I do?
That's an awful place to be in, isn't it? Now, I can think of times when I've been in a position like that and like how hard it was to either do or not do it. But I'm not saying I always made the right decision in those circumstances, but could you imagine, like, I just imagine the pressure on Adam at that time would have been like 1,000 times what we have faced. Because, I mean, this is it. This is the first time. He's been in perfection. He's been in fellowship with God face to face. And now death is coming, and he knows it. He knows death is coming. But he didn't know exactly what that meant. So he was not deceived. So it entered the world through Adam's disobedience. Even though Eve sinned first, Adam was responsible before God. Because God works on an understanding of authority, of chain of command, if I could put it like that. That, you know, this is one thing, this is like a principle of leadership that we get from God, is that if you're the leader, if you're the one in charge and it's somebody under your care, they mess up, it's your fault. You say, well, I wasn't there. I didn't know they did that right. I get that. I understand that. But you answer for it because they were under your watch. That's, you know, the chain of command. That's how God has it set up. Like Adam could have been like, well, she did it. I didn't do it. Yeah, but she was under your watch care. You were supposed to take care of that. And that's how it is. And that's a mentality that's really understood in the military. It really does help to understand that because that's exactly how they work with a chain of command. I'm not saying there's not mistakes and it always works out perfectly like that. But for the most part in the military, that mind frame, they understand that. Like, I'm chewing you out. Even most businesses, if you work somewhere, that's how most businesses work. Now, they might not always hold to it like as strict as they would in the military, but most people get that. They're like, I don't care that it was your employee that did it. What were you doing? Why didn't you train them properly? Why didn't you make sure they didn't do that? I mean, that's oftentimes how it goes down. Now, not always, because we understand you look at certain circumstances, but you get what I'm trying to teach you. This is how God works under a chain of command, under an authority. This is why the weight and the burden and the responsibility and the blame fell at Adam's feet, because he was in charge. He was the head. He was put as the head. So Adam was responsible before God. All right, also, sin spread throughout the world. Now let's go to Romans chapter 1, if we would. Romans chapter 1. Romans 1:19. All right, I'm going to ask for some help. If maybe we can each just read a couple verses. We're going to start at verse 19 and go through the end of the chapter. So if I can just start back there with Jacob, and then we'll just go across and up and up and over and then over and just down till we finish. So if we'd each just read 2 verses, we'll start at Romans 1:19. So Jacob, if you'll start us off, please.
Amen. Boy, man, you got like the hardest words in that thing, man. Like both verses are like the hardest words there. Right? It's like, oh, man. But you can see the spreading of it and just the downgrade as things got worse and worse. But it starts off that it says in verse 19, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them, how through creation. So God's revealed himself through creation. But then we get into verse 21, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God. That's how it starts. And you really can see five steps to becoming an atheist right here. If you look through this, but it starts off with them not glorifying him as God. So just a devaluing of who God is. And let me just stop right here and say, as we're looking at this and the origin of sin and it's spread throughout the world, is that not the devaluing of who Jesus Christ is and who God is? Is that not exactly what's happening in modern day American Christianity? Is there not a devaluing of who God is? I mean, that's exactly what I see happening. There's a devaluing of who God is, of his holiness, of his righteousness, of what his real love is, okay, of even his mercy. Because, look, you've got this crowd that they talk about the mercy of God, but they devalue his mercy and the value of his mercy because they take away the sting of sin. Like, no, here's the real value of his mercy is that look at how wicked and vile and evil you are, and yet God still has not sent you to hell. So the ones that proclaim his mercy the most are the ones that devalue it the most. And really, that's an attack on the character of God. These people are attacking the character of God and who God is. They're not glorifying, as it says right here, they're not glorifying him as God. And the Bible warned us that there'd be, you know, if there come another Christ unto you, don't receive him. And that's exactly what's happening. So it's all, I serve Jesus Christ, which one? Which one? Because there is a devaluing of God. But this is the spread of it, of sin, and how it really took off. How did it start? Because they didn't glorify him as God, neither were thankful. They were unthankful. They were not thankful. Boy, that's why it's important for us to count our blessings. I mean, man, we ought to be able to just start spitting them out. Just like that. Here, I'm thankful for this. I'm thankful for this. I'm thankful for this. I know something. Maybe we just need to get the motor just going on that, but we ought to be able to just be spit out the things that we're thankful for. Man, we have so much to be thankful for. I mean, we really do. I mean, I'm thankful that I have clothes. I mean, that we've got nice soft chairs to sit on. We've got a piano. I've got a pulpit to stand behind. We've got the heater going. We've got a fan going. I mean, there's just, you name it. You can start listing it. Man, thankful for a beautiful day today. You know, I'm thankful for the snow this week because New Mexico always needs moisture. You know, I mean, there's so many things to be thankful for. Hey, I'm thankful that I was in a car accident. Well, because there's nothing wrong with my truck really other than the bed's all banged up. But, man, the Lord provided for my family through that to give us $1,500. You know, I mean, there's so many things we can be thankful for. Even things right now that may be disastrous in your eyes, you're seeing something as disastrous, but yet you don't know how that's going to play out in 5 years from now. This is why we're to, you know, rejoice in everything. Rejoice in all things. To be thankful in all things. To give thanks in everything, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus. You know, and I'm always, every time I start thinking like this, I am always reminded of Betsy and Corey Ten Boom in a Nazi concentration camp and giving thanks to God. Betsy Ten Boom bowing her head with her sister, and she is giving thanks to God for the fleas, and Corey's there mad that she's giving thanks to God for the fleas, only to realize later that it was those fleas that kept the guards away and let them be at peace when they were in their, you know, their shelter, their dorm room. You know, because we can't see it doesn't mean God's not doing something amazing. Because it may seem like it's bad doesn't mean God's not doing something amazing. So we just need to be thankful. But these people, what did they do? How did sin spread? Well, they didn't glorify God as God, and they were unthankful. That's it right there. And then what happens next? They become vain in their imaginations. And then their thoughts are just towards emptiness. Ouch, that one hurts me right there. I'm telling you right now, that one hurts me. To just have empty thoughts that are really to no value. How much stuff do we think about that's to no value? Can I just, social media? Okay, the entertainment we partake of, is it really to any value? And I'm not saying we need to get rid of social media. I'm not saying you need to get rid of all your entertainment, but how much of it are we spending that it's to no value? Because it helps us to become vain in our imaginations. Amen. I'm not saying that it's all wrong or anything like that, or it's wrong to even daydream. It doesn't have to be things outside. It could just be daydreaming. But is it going to lead us to having vain imaginations, just thoughts that are just meaningless, that are empty, that have no real value? And this is why we're to walk circumspect, because as you start thinking about that, like, isn't there so many fronts we need to just be on guard for? I mean, there's just so many areas that we can, you know, sin against God. So we need to watch it. But they became vain in their imaginations, and look at this, and their foolish heart was darkened. And then it darkens the heart. Uh-oh. Uh-oh, we're in trouble once that starts happening, once the heart starts getting darkened. Verse 22, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And that's why I said, you know, five steps to becoming an atheist, because the fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. And now just because you follow those five steps, you've become a fool. They profess themselves to be wise, but they've become fools. And this is how sin has spread. This was the spread of sin, and we can still see it to this day. This is how it happens. Just, you know, take a look at your own life, look at others, I mean, and you'll see this is what happens. This is essentially what they do. Have you ever been really close with God, and then you just slowly, you know, maybe you stop and realize you one day you're like, I'm not as close with God as I was at one point. And then you start looking back on it, and you pretty much follow this path right here. I mean, this is about what happened to you. Your heart starts getting darkened, and you just stop caring as much as you did. You're just stepping back. And it's easy to do, and you wonder, well, how can, you know, these people say that they're saved, and they get out of church, and they get away from God? Maybe they're saved, maybe they're not. And I think some of them are saved, but they followed this and their heart got darkened. And now we all know Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Well, that's what happens. And it's just a slow process. And that can be anyone in here right now. That could be any one of us. You say, well, how does David, King David, a man after God's own heart, get to the point where he's willing to commit adultery with a woman and then kill her husband to cover it up? How does he get to that? Well, he's a saved man. You tell me. Because he followed this right here. He did that. That's what he allowed to happen. This is why we have to walk circumspectly. This is why we have to keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. The issues of life, the things that we do, the manner in which we live, come out of our heart right here, and we have to guard it. And that's what this is talking about. If we don't, this sin spreads. We could say, yes, for mankind, we're looking at it here, how it spread over, you know, from the origin to continue to this day. But even in our own personal life, this is how sin spreads. And we have to keep it in check. It says they changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man. And then they start making their own God. Why? Because the fool has said in his heart, there is no God, so I'm going to make the God that I want. And that's exactly what they do. They change the glory of the uncorruptible God. Remember, that's how it started. They glorified him not as God. And now what should be his, they start giving it those attributes to, how is it worded here? Sorry, let me find it. Into an image made like to corruptible man. They start giving that glory, the attributes of God, to images made like to corruptible man. And is that not what we see it with the Greek gods? The pagan gods, isn't that what they're doing? They're giving the attributes of God to those creatures that are like corruptible man. That's exactly what happens. Okay? And by the way, the atheist does the same thing. The atheist attributes all the characteristics of God to mankind. They do it. Well, it's survival of the fittest. We did this. We got here. I mean, they're doing the same thing. It's no different. So they changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, into birds, four-footed beasts, and creeping things. Wherefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own heart. We're looking at sin, so God says, this is what you want. Okay, he says, you started off by not glorifying me and not giving me what's due me. He says, and then you followed this process, and now here's where you're at. If that's what you want, then he says, you can have it. It says, God gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts. Now remember, when we talked about sin earlier, what was it? It was to turn to one's own way. All we like sheep have gone astray, we have turned to our own way. God says, that's what you want, then you can have it. And by the way, when you're reading through Romans 1, remember, this is God's judgment. When God starts giving people over to their sin, and look at America. Look at America and see. Just go back to 1970 even. 1980. And there was a vocal opposition to sodomites. I mean, there really was. And now, look, there is a vocal opposition if you're against them. That's where we're at now. God has given us up to uncleanness through the lusts of our own hearts. Now, I know I'm not saying that that's what we desire. I'm saying us as a whole America. God says, you want it, you can have it. And we're seeing the beginning of God's judgment on America. I mean, this is what it is. He says, you want to murder your own children? You want to rip them to pieces? He says, have it. Have it. I mean, how much farther can we fall? Honestly, when we are tearing limb from limb the very most vulnerable of our society, when that's what we're doing, how much farther can we fall? Like, I can't see us falling any farther than that. I'm not saying things can't get worse, but as a society, when that's what we're doing, how can we fall any farther? Say, well, they might start aborting, you know, one-year-olds and two-year-olds, but we're already doing that. What's the difference? There's no difference. We're already doing it. Just because they're in the womb doesn't mean they're not life. We're already doing it. We can't fall any farther. We're there. How much farther can we go? I don't see us going any farther. I'm not saying it can't be worse or multiplied, but we're already there at the bottom. It just may be more of it. We've devalued the beginning of life, and we're devaluing the end of life. There's no sanctity for human life in our society. And this is the world over as well. But I'm just talking about America. There's no sanctity for human life. Because it's now, you know, you can kill yourself if you want to at the end of your life. We'll assist at suicide. We will assist you in doing it. What's wrong with us as a society that that's what we want? You know, well, they're so sick that that's what they want. Then they should have done it when they could have done it. Instead of having someone else help them. Like, no Christian should have any part in that. Any part in that. Because we don't value life. But they did it through the lusts of their own hearts. Notice, this is what they wanted. That's why I say, when people say, I was born gay. No, you weren't. You're going after the lust of your heart. This is what you want. That's exactly what you want, and God even gets into it. Likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly. Unseemly means improper, unbecoming, indecent. That's what it is. And look at how God gets across what he means without being vulgar. But men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet. They burned in their lust one toward another. That's what it is. God gave them over to their lust. He says, this is what you desire. You want to go after your own way? He said, you can have it. It's all yours. Take it. Take it. This is how sin has spread throughout the world. God, when God gives people up to their sin, that is the beginning of God's judgment. And that's, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, that's where we're at in America right now. We are at the beginning of God's judgment. Let me give you another little proof. This is a side note. Let's go to Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 3. So I said, in my opinion, just based on where we're at as a nation, God has begun to judge this nation because he's giving us over to what we want. And here's a further sign of God's judgment on a nation in Isaiah chapter 3 and verse 11. It says, woe unto the wicked, it shall be ill with him, for the reward of his hands shall be given him. As for my people, children are their oppressors and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of thy paths. The Lord standeth up to plead and standeth to judge the people. But he says, my people, children are their oppressors and women rule over them. This is when you start seeing women ruling over a nation, when you start seeing children oppressing, which is what we have before us, you say, how is that happening? Well, man, what was it? I just forgot. It was just like a year or two ago. What was that kid's name? David something? Do you guys remember? David Hogg. What was he standing up for? What was all that about? I forgot. Guns, against guns, gun control. But he became like some like knowledgeable like person we want to go to, some 17-year-old kid that knows nothing. I'm like, this is where we're getting our knowledge from. This is what is leading the nation. Children are oppressing us. We've got children now telling us to do away with guns, and politicians are just like, oh, you're so great. Like, what are we doing? What is going on? Yeah, Greta Thunberg with her global warming and all that. I mean, this is what's happening. Even you know, the BLM and everything, that's who's out there? Children. Children are out there. Well, they're 18, 19, 20. Children, like I said, children are out there. That's what's happening. Children are oppressing us, and women are ruling over us. Look at the tyrant we have in office right now. You say, well, I thought you liked the governor of South Dakota. I do like what she's doing. I wouldn't vote for her, though. And I love what she's doing, but I wouldn't vote for her. Why? Because I'm asking for God's judgment. How can I violate what the Word of God says? I'm like, we need some men to stand up and do those things. Like, the saddest part of all that to me is that the one with the most backbone in our nation is a woman. Where are all these coward men at? Like, this is what we've come to. Why? Because we've feminized men and masculinized women. And here's what we have. It's sad that she's the only one with enough backbone to stand against everyone. And it took her to lead other states even to follow her example. The few states that didn't capitulate to everything the tyrants are wanting. But look here in our state, what's happening. I'm telling you, we are in the beginning of God's judgment. Here it is, folks. Here it is. We are in the beginning of God's judgment on this nation. And to me, it's been long overdue. I'm like, thank God for his mercy. Like, I don't understand what's holding his hand of judgment. I'm talking about, when I say his hand of judgment, I'm talking about when the hammer drops, okay? Not just the beginning of it that we're in right now. I don't know what's holding it back. I thank God for it, and I pray we can turn this thing around, honestly, because I don't want to face nothing like that. Nothing like God's judgment. And you say, people would say, well, you're trying to fearmonger and all this stuff. I'm like, look at the Bible. Read the Bible. Look at what he did to other nations that went down the same path we are on. Look at history. And what happened to those nations that went down the same path that we are on. Just look at it. Look at those nations that don't like seek to follow God as best they can. And I'm not ever saying America was a Christian nation, but we were most definitely founded on many Christian principles. You cannot deny that. You cannot deny that. And it was God bless America, and God's hand was on this nation. I mean, this nation's a miracle. This is the first nation in all of history that had the liberties that we have. If you can't tell me God was involved in that, you're crazy. You're just crazy. God's hand was all over this, and because of that, liberty did spread throughout the world because they started seeing what we did, and they said, we want that same thing. And this is why everyone wanted to come to America, because there was opportunity here. And that's what made America great, was the principles that we were founded on. That's what made us great. But when you look at nations that are where we're at, just look what happened to them. And I just wonder how long for us. And I hope we can turn it around. I pray we can turn it around. But just like it was slow going into it, if it does turn around, it's going to be slow coming out of it. Or it's just going to be, boom, there it is, and now deal with it. Because when God's judgment comes, it's not going to be good. It never has been for any other nation. And the American mindset is, that won't happen here. That can't happen here. What are you talking about? Like, why are we more special? Do we actually believe it when God says that he's no respecter of persons? I mean, just stop and think. If he did it to his chosen people, the nation of Israel, man, then what makes us think that he won't do it to us? I mean, the pride in America is like, we have this mindset that like bad things can't happen to us. Well, part of the reason we have that mindset is because we have been blessed enough that those bad things have not happened here. There has not been battles on this continent. Well, is it this continent? Yeah, it would be North America. There haven't been battles on this continent here in America. The only ones we've really had where there was a battle was the American Revolution, the War of 1812, which is, to me, I link that with the American Revolution, but whatever, you don't have to, and then the Civil War. That's it. Other than that, we haven't faced war here. We didn't see or experience World War II like they did in Europe. Okay, it was like their houses were being blown to pieces. Like they are going through the rubble with shopping carts and ducking when they hear the sirens going off or when bombs start going off. I mean, they're sending their children away to go live in the country to get them out of the cities in order to be protected. We haven't had to do that. We haven't experienced anything like that since 1865. That's the last time that was experienced here in America. And we have the mentality that, well, these bad things won't happen here. Who says? Why won't they? What are we more special than anybody else? No, if we do the same things that these other nations that have been judged by God have done, God will do the same thing to us, and we're doing them. And in my opinion, we are in the beginning of His judgment. That's just my opinion. You don't have to agree with my understanding of things. That's just how I see things. But this is the origin of sin. This is how it spreads. It spreads through that process, and we need to guard that in our own lives and look and say, where am I at in that? God, I want to pull back from that. I don't want to be in that. God, help me. And we got to be circumspect because there's always an attack on some front, always. It just never stops. I mean, we are in warfare, so we have to be circumspect and look. I mean, things might be great today, but then, you know, a bomb may go off over here, and they're not great the next day or 2 minutes from now. I mean, that's how this life is. We are told we're in warfare. We're told to be sober, to be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. This is how the devil's working. This is the world that we're in. We are in a spiritual warfare, spiritual battle, and there's attacks coming, and we have to be ready for them. We have to be on guard for them, because sin will spread in our own lives if we're not careful. All right.